Oh, hey, Mike, we just got another 5-star review. I can't believe I got my order so fast.
Oh, nice.
Oh, here's another one. Easiest exchange ever. Loyal customer for life.
Now that's what I'm talking about, boss.
Mike, we've gotten more rave reviews in the last 2 months than we ever have. What are we doing differently?
Well, our order fulfillment needed an upgrade, so I've been trying out ShipStation with their 60-day free trial.
Well, with reviews like these, I'm sold.
Me too. ShipStation automates everything, all in one place. They're way more comprehensive than the other solutions I was considering.
Oh, look at this. Our spend went down too.
Oh, that's because ShipStation's rate browser compares over 200 carriers to ensure we get the best rates, up to 90% off.
Nice work. We needed this upgrade with how fast we're growing.
Upgrade to ShipStation today and get a 60-day free trial with unlimited access to all features at ShipStation.com with code AUDIO.
Well, welcome to Addicted to Faith, the last storyteller podcast. I'm Jim Hurdle, your host, and tonight with me is a mystery writer. His name is Warren Haddock. And his books include Life After Death, an Archie Drexel story, and The Source of Truth, also an Archie Drexel mystery, I should say. Welcome to the Last Storyteller podcast, Mr. Warren Haddock. How are you this evening?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm glad you could come on board. Before we talk about your books, let's talk about who Warren Haddock is. Let the people know that there is a person behind the writer.
Yes, very much so. Warren Haddock is my pen name. I co-opted it. Two very, very special ladies in my life who really encouraged me to start writing again. And, I owe them both a lot. And so when I started writing, I decided my real name, by the way, is Tim Johnson. There's only, 7 bazillion of us on the planet. And so that was another reason why I chose to use a pen name. But I asked these two ladies if I could use their last names as my pen name. One was last name Warren, the other last name of Haddock. And they were both thrilled and honored and said enthusiastic, yes, we will do that. So that is how Warren Haddock was born. But funny story, sub-story to that. As I was about to publish, I'm an independent author. I didn't go through a major publishing house, but it asked for a publisher. And I'm like, well, there's going to be a little bit more legitimacy if I list a publisher. And so as part of my day job, I have my own corporation, and I can create as many subnames, DBAs, doing business as I want to. And so I created one called Rabid Dog Publishing. And when you look in the books, you'll see it is published by Rabid Dog Publishing. That's been a running joke between my wife and me for ages since we've been married. The rabid dog that Atticus Finch shoots and kills in To Kill a Mockingbird was named Tim Johnson. And so, the whole rabid dog thing has just been a running joke between the two of us. So that's how Rabid Dog Publishing came to be. So I brought in a little of my identity with that. So
dogs play a big part in both your books.
Yes. Yeah. Archie has two dogs. In the first book, dogs play a very major role. So Archie has two dogs of his own, as do I. They're both Shih Tzus, or as I tell people, the zoo is silent. So mine have kind of similar age difference to Archie's. And, Archie's dogs are named Oscar Wilde and Dorothy Parker, two great playwrights. And you both have just this whole list and collection of great quotes between them. And so my older dog, if I could see his thought bubbles on the daily, Probably the most common thing I would see is the Dorothy Parker quote, "What fresh hell is this?" He is a curmudgeon in a fur coat. He does not like to be disturbed. And so it was, writing for Oscar Wilde and Dorothy Parker was very easy. I just had to observe my dogs. The first story, Life After Death, takes place right after Archie's wife passes away from cancer. And I had to explain to my own wife why I killed her off in the first chapter. I kind of get into that in the book too, because Archie's wife and my wife would never let either of us go off and start solving mysteries. And both wives would have had the house on the market the first time a murder took place in the neighborhood. So, as much as I love my wife, she had to go. If I was going to write authentically about Archie solving mysteries, that was, one of the things. But in the first chapter, Archie's wife has just passed away from cancer. And a few days after the funeral, we find that his next-door neighbor's dog, a huge Newfie named Sox, was poisoned by the neighbor on the other side. And Sox ends up living, gets rushed to the vet, and Sox's owner calls the police and then threatens the guy who poisoned her dog. Well, the very next day, the guy stumbles out of his house onto his lawn and drops dead from poisoning. And of course, the neighbor, Sox's owner, is the prime suspect because she threatened him in front of the police. And so that's where a lot of the action takes place, is, what happened and how and why. And you get to meet a lot of his neighbors, very quirky bunch of people. It was fun to write them. I did have to explain to my neighbors across the street that the annoying neighbors across the street from Archie were not based on them. So I let them know that. But it was just fun writing these neighbors and having fun with all of that and creating. It was very easy to write because so much of it, is based in truth. Archie, as do I, has two daughters, similar ages. My daughters are in their 20s, as are Archie's. They both have lives of their own, and so I incorporated that. There are plenty of dogs, and then one of Archie's new friends, Xander, has a golden retriever who kind of rounds out the mix of dogs. And then in the second book, a dog gargoyle, dog statue, whatever, falls off a building or is pushed, we don't know yet, and crushes a disreputable CBD dealer at the local farmer's market. So my poor younger daughter, who's actually in college right now, she's studying to become a physical therapist, but she was taking anatomy last year. And so she would get random questions from me, like, how much blood is in the human skull at any one time? And so she would answer my question, and then she would say, is this for your book, or do we have deeper problems we need to discuss? And so we would, I assured her it was purely for research for the murder mystery. She had nothing to worry about. She's also a psych minor, so I keep getting the feeling she's trying to get a read on me. And,
it sounds like she has a sense of humor, which obviously you do in reading the book. And that does come through. I was astonished just in the first chapter of the first book of how many characters you are able to squeeze in to that first chapter.
Yeah, I kind of took a page from the Godfather playbook, where the Godfather starts out with the wedding, to introduce all these characters, and so I started out with a funeral to do the same thing. So.
Well, it worked very well. Any good murder mystery has a long list of characters, and you satisfied that right from the get-go in the first book, and naming all these different characters, including this detective, Ted Woods, is also brought on board. And
Yeah.
so there's a you have the amateur sleuth, Archie Drexel, and then you bring in the professional. And
Yes.
their partnership is well, a little unexpected, but amazingly, it carries you through that story. By the way.
Yeah, and then we added in Xander Benjamin, in about the seventh or eighth chapter. Who sort of rounds out the trio. And as my older daughter was reading my book, she's like, "Dad, these three guys are the three elements of Freud's psyche. You've got the id, the ego, and the superego." And I'm like, "Good God, you're right." So yeah, they balance each other really well, but the early chapters among the three of them are kind of tenuous. I mean, Ted is sort of your typical police law enforcement, does not trust outsiders. So since Xander and Archie are civilians, his trust factor is a little bit, I'm not sure I what to make of these guys.
Well,
So.
they come together, they fit together very well. And I think your daughter's description of them is very appropriate because they're three unique characters. It's easy sometimes. I read a lot, and it's often that you start reading and they'll have multiple characters, but they all sound the same. They're described, their traits, their physical characteristics are all described differently. But a writer sometimes falls into this pit of everybody talks exactly the same, and yours don't. When I'm reading that, it's I can almost hear that how my mind thinks that person is going to be. It sort of comes about pretty easily in your writing.
Yeah, and I used to volunteer for the local SWAT team as their training photographer. So I kind of got used to police officers and how they talk, what vocabulary they use, their mannerisms. So Ted sort of became a conglomerate of a lot of guys that I knew on the force. So it was fun
And
to write him.
it does, and building characters like that. So you chose to write in mysteries. I understand in the past you did some more nonfiction educational type of writing, and you move into mysteries, which is a very good genre to be in. Romance still leads the pack, and then right
Yes.
behind that is mysteries. You
Yeah.
look at the number of podcasts like this that are out there that are about cold cases or unsolved type of crimes or historical crimes. They're so popular. I find myself listening to them all the time. I'm not a mystery writer, but I love a good mystery.
Yeah.
What brought you to this storytelling?
Well, it was a couple of things actually. Besides being an IT project manager, which is kind of how I ended up writing Archie as sort of a data kind of guy, I'm also a retired adjunct college professor from Drake University. And so for 20 years, I taught MBA classes in office politics, project management, etc. And when I retired 4 years ago, I found myself with all this free time. And it was a little disconcerting at first. It was sort of like retirement light because I still had my day job, but my daughters had reached that point where they didn't need full-time dad anymore. And I wasn't, spending copious amount of time grading and, doing lesson planning and what have you. So I started doing some, reading for pleasure, started, watching shows I liked on TV, etc. And one of the shows I stumbled upon was Only Murders in the Building. I love the chemistry among Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez, pure magic. But after the second season ended, my wife found this article that said, already suffering withdrawal from Only Murders in the Building. I mean, mind you, this is like the day after it aired, so I found that humorous. But it gave a list of books to start reading. And that introduced me to the cozy genre of murder mysteries. So I got started on things like Richard Osman's Thursday Murder Club. Found the Marlowe Murder Club.
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals. Like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Club, Ellen Byron's book, Very Woodsy Murder. Just some really, really fun murder mystery writers. And about that same time, my daughter was working for a historic house museum, and they asked me to start writing their murder mystery dinners for them. Which was a challenge. I mean, it was a victim plus 60 guests. So they do it fully immersive. So if you're there, you have a role to play. And I technically should be working on the one for this fall right now, but I find myself procrastinating on that. So I've been writing those since the spring of 24 and acting in them, starting in 23. And so in 24 I took over, the first one, a friend of mine and I were in the victim role. It was a double murder. And then, after that I started playing the MC role, which is even more fun. I get to totally cheese it up. For the audience, but it was a lot of fun. And I noticed, like, right after the first one was done, you know how an actor just sort of goes through this letdown withdrawal after a performance. And I was kind of suffering that. And my friend, who had been my fellow victim, was also encouraging me to. He's like, "Well, why don't you start writing, murder mystery novels? You're obviously good at writing." And it was one of those, sign from the universe things, because my other two friends, the Warren and the Haddock of my pen name, were telling me the same thing. So I was like, okay, if this many people are telling me this, it must be true. And so I just started storyboarding the first book, and that led into storyboarding the second book and the third book and the fourth book. And then that fall, my contract that I had with a client ended rather abruptly, and so I found myself with all this free time, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to get, like old and fat and just spend my day binge watching shows, so let's get writing. And so I started writing on my birthday, which was October 1st of last year. And I, like any writer, you spend your time just sort of thinking about the characters and the plot, even when you're not actively doing things. So the first book I had drafted in like 3 weeks, all 40 chapters. And And so the second book took a little bit longer to sort of work through. There was a few more complexities to it. But yeah, I just enjoyed writing. I decided I would release the first two together so that people could really get vested in these characters. And it worked and it backfired. It worked in that, you know, people got really vested in the characters. It backfired in that, you know, a lot of people have now said, where's the next book? I got to see what happens to these three guys. So now I have this little mini fandom who are pressuring me to write more. So it's like,
Well, know. give them little spoonfuls.
Yeah.
I did notice that Life After Death and Source of Truth, they came out at the same time. That was a courageous move to make into a very, very busy market. To have Archie Drexel out there in a whole lot of pages in two different books, but he's a likable character and they're good stories. When you were writing these or the stuff that you're currently working on, when you're writing a mystery, do you know from the beginning who done it?
Pretty much, yes. Kind of like with the murder mystery dinners, the novels are pretty similar. You kind of have to start with the victim murderer relationship and sort of know what's going on there. And then from there you kind of build out from, okay, who are the red herrings? Who are the people you want your readers to think did it until the very end? And then, you know, who are the minor characters who might provide a clue, or they might just provide comic relief or whatever. You kind of work outwards, or at least that's my writing style.
I'm sorry, you did great. I was surprised when the reveal happened. I I'm not a mystery writer, but I love to read a good mystery. And I've always thought I can figure this out before the author tells me. And sometimes you can, right? Or you get a suspicion, or maybe they slip up a little bit, or something just happens. It's a gut feeling. I haven't finished Source of Truth yet. I started reading that actually yesterday. I was on a plane coming back from Florida. It's like it almost immediately the timeline, right? It's shortly after.
Yeah, it's not too long afterwards. I think it. Life After Death winds up kind of at the end of April, and then Source of Truth picks up sort of mid-May.
Yeah, because you're still talking about the crime from the first book at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but then, you know, one of the things I wanted to tackle in these books, and you know, hopefully you've picked up on it as well, is men's mental health. One of the things when, you know, reading cozies is, and I'm totally fine with this because quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, women are so much smarter than us guys, but a lot of the sleuths are women.
Most of them today. Yes.
Yeah. And you plop them into a coffee shop or a bookstore or an antique shop, give them a cat, and it's either in England or New England, and call it good, you know? And I was like, well, what about a boring suburban white guy in the Midwest, you know, a man of a certain age? So that's sort of how these characters came to be. And, you know, Archie and Ted and Xander, all three have backstories that, you know, will get explored over time. But I really wanted to explore topics like anxiety and grief and loneliness and depression and imposter syndrome and you name it. That, you know, men's mental health is coming to the forefront of, you know, a lot of media attention. And yeah, so without sounding preachy, I wanted to sort of address that because one of the things, at least I noticed in my life, is that point after I had retired from teaching and my daughters didn't need me as much anymore. It's like, well, I've been so busy parenting and working that, you know, friendships kind of had to fall by the wayside. And so I found myself, you know, a man of a certain age, and sort of like how Archie described it, you know, most guys already have their clique. And so I sort of had to start from ground zero. And I love the line that Archie says in the first book when he's texting his daughter, when he's talking about how easy it was in kindergarten when you could just walk up to another boy and say, hey, you're wearing a blue shirt, I'm wearing a blue shirt, let's be friends for life. And it was just that simple. And now, you know, talking to a lot of my friends, it has become a lot more complex than that. So I wanted to address some of those things.
Archie, he's recently widowed.
Yes.
His daughters are grown. He finds himself alone, except for the dogs. And to go out and socialize or to make friends, as his daughter suggests that he does, is a stumbling block, not only for your character, but for many people. And you address these issues, but you do it as a stream in the main river. It doesn't take away from the story. It's there, and use the word preachy. It's not preachy, but it adds a level of realism to your characters to know those type of things, those things that are happening.
Right? Yeah, one of the highest praises I've received on my book came from a friend of mine who about 2 or 3 years ago lost his wife to cancer. And he read my books and he's like, oh my gosh, you completely captured the grief thing. He's like, I did not realize how much it was going to hit me until I read your books. So that was, and he did so very complimentarily. You know, it wasn't a case of, you made me cry again. You know, it was a case of, you know, appreciation. You know, he felt seen, which made me feel, great that I was able to give him a voice in that journey. So.
He did, and even with Archie, his character, and the trip to the farmer's market, that is in the second book, correct?
Yes.
The trip to the farmer's market is in the second. His hesitation there, because that was something he and his wife did together. It was something special for them. And in your friend reading that, seeing it, knowing it's that you're the writer of the book and knowing that it's a fictional story, to be able to see that, to feel that relationship that he had with his own wife when she was suffering, going through cancer and succumbing to cancer, is what a lot of readers look for, even in a mystery story. You know, and Archie is right now, he's in a unique world right now. Now, you go back 30, 40, 50 years ago, all your sleuths, with exception of a handful, were men. They were always men, you know, crime fighters. And now your Archie's competing against Vera Wong and Nola Holmes and Finley Donovan. And they're all women or girls in the case of Finley. They're out there everywhere, and it's become very popular. Two of the podcasts I listen to that are crime type of podcasts, the two that I like the most are both hosted by women talking about crime. You had said in your bio, I'm going to scroll up here so I get it exactly right. You had said that you're not allowed to kill people in real life. But you chose to bump them off in an Archie Drexel mystery novel.
Yes.
That's a safe place to be.
Exactly. And, when you work in the corporate world long enough, I had a friend who was a pastor, and he told me once, he's like, if someone in my congregation annoys me, I go back to my office, I shut my door, and I write their obituary. And I've always remembered that. And it's just like, that is great. but it was funny, even naming the characters too. I talked about my pen name, but Archie Drexel came about in sort of a very odd way as well. My family and I vacationed a couple years ago in Northwest Arkansas for spring break. And we drove down, and you know, it was about a 6-7 hour drive from Des Moines, Iowa, down to, you know, the Bentonville Rogers area. And as we're driving, I think it was just north of Joplin, we passed this exit, and you know how these exits are. They have a couple of tiny towns listed. And the two towns that were listed for this one exit were Drexel and Archie. And I saw that, I'm like, Archie Drexel, that would make a great name for a character. And so, yeah, that's how Archie got his name. So,
Archie Drexel. Yeah. I like that. That's a good story in itself. And as I think as a writer, and a lot of writers, indie authors in particular, listen to the podcast, and you're a writer, I'm a writer, and sometimes coming up with that name is more challenging than any other part of the book.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, because nobody really knows who they are, you know, and, yeah. And you could call them whatever you wanted to call them, and nobody would know the difference, but it does become this art form of coming up with those names. I try to avoid using any names of any friends or family members at all, because even if it fits, they think, are you writing about me? And of course,
yeah, exactly. And that is a challenge. And, you know, even really coming up with the location, I opted to create a fictional suburb of Des Moines, sort of a portmanteau of two existing suburbs. So I live in a town called Urbandale, and there's an adjacent town called Windsor Heights. So I created the town of Windale, and you know, just because, like, I'm writing about the police force, and I just don't want anyone thinking, "Oh, who on the Urbandale police force is this?" You know, like I said, having worked on the SWAT team, you know, I've worked with characters across the metro. So I kind of have an out there, you kind of have to be careful, when you're writing about, certain people or places or companies or what have you. So
you do. Do you consider yourself an amateur sleuth?
I like to observe people and situations, and while I've never solved a crime per se, I sort of like to create my own stories. Going to the airport, for example, is prime people watching, because, you know, you watch this person, and you observe their mannerisms and maybe some of the exchanges they're having with people around them. And you're like, ah, you know, they're a Russian spy who's being very clumsy at pretending they're just a normal American. So, you know, that kind of thing where you ascribe a story to someone that you don't even know just based on what you're observing. So,
yeah. So you mentioned there's more books, more Archie Drexel books. Now, in Life After Death and Source of Truth, these crimes sort of fall into his lap.
Yes.
Is Archie Drexel going to ever become the sleuth looking for the crime?
I don't know yet. You know, in the next two, it's again going to be sort of falls into their lap. And, you know, as you're reading any kind of cozy, you have to sort of suspend disbelief. Like, nobody just kind of stumbles into that many murders in that quick succession. Either they're very cursed or very blessed. I don't know which. But yeah, so Archie and Ted and Xander will be stumbling into a lot of different deaths in the next two books due out in 2026.
Archie Drexel's got a life ahead of him. I'm looking forward to it. Tell us now how our listeners can go out there and get Life After Death right now and Source of Truth.
Yes.
Drexel Mysteries.
Both books are available in paperback and Kindle Through Amazon. So I use Kindle Direct Publishing to create them. Very easy process, I have to say. It was, not difficult at all. Amazon does make it much easier for independent authors than, say, 15, 20 years ago when I wrote my other book. So it's very, very simple to get them. Just either search for Warren Haddock or search for Archie Drexel Mysteries.
Well, that's what we want to do is we want to sell some books. So we'll put the links to Amazon in the show notes for everybody to
Yeah.
go there and go buy these books. They're cozy mysteries. They're a cozy read. A South Dakota guy.
Yeah.
He wrote a good review. A good review. And it says, a great read is a man of certain age who has struggled with grief. I see a lot of myself in Archie. I don't think there's a better compliment a writer can receive than being told by somebody that they can relate with either a character or a story. I think you've when you reach that point, you've accomplished more than if you sold a million books. It's a very special thing to be able to reach a person like that with your work, because they're words on paper.
Yeah.
You did a great job in doing
Thank you.
that, Mr. Warren Haddock. Well, that was my interview with Warren Haddock, author. He wrote Life After Death and Source of Truth, an Archie Drexel Mystery. I put links to both of his books in the show notes, and you can go there and click on those links and go buy these books. They're really good. Lots of fun to read. There's one more show note that I wanted to add today. My interview with Warren Haddock was conducted shortly before the sad and tragic death of Charlie Kirk. As a nation, we listened and we watched that, and we were all in shock and horror and had questions, and some of those questions have become the answers have become available for us, including who pulled the trigger, who took the life away from Charlie, a husband and a father at such a young age. Well, the shooter was also young, and mental health is an issue. And as Warren Haddock mentioned in our interview, one of his goals in writing the books was to put a highlight on the mental health problem that men face today. I think especially young men like this person who took Charlie's life. If you have a problem that seems too large to overcome, or if you know someone that's facing these mental health challenges, there's a lifeline that you can call to get help. It's 988 Lifeline. I'll also put a link to their website in the notes, in the show notes. Nothing is too large to overcome when you look for help and you seek help. That was just a show note that I felt I had to put in there. But the podcast is about books and about reading books. And Life After Death and Source of Truth are two really good books that you should go read. Well, I'm going to get out of here now. Look for me. I'm the one walking down the highway carrying a book in my hands.
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Save big money on all your electrical needs at Menards. From wire, tools, testers, and more, Southwire is the perfect choice for your next electrical project. They offer innovative products to help you get your project done right. Hurry in today and save big on all Southwire products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.